The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter Number 4, Text Number 22, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on October 16th, 2010, in Pune, India.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto Number 3, Chapter Number 4, Vidura approaches Maitreya. Text number 22. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Te Vasudevaya.
Yatra Narayano Devo.
Narascha Bhagavan Rishi.
Mridyuti Vrantapo Dhirgham.
Tipate Lokabhavano.
Yatra Narayano Devo.
Narascha Bhagavan Rishi.
Mridyuti Vrantapo Dhirgam.
Tipate Lokabhavano.
Translation and purport by Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. And there in Bhardarika Ashram, the personality of Godhead, in his incarnation as these sages Nara and Narayan, has been undergoing great penance since time immemorial for the welfare of all amiable living entities. Purport. Bhardarika Ashram in the Himalayas, the abode of the Nara Narayan sages, is a great place of pilgrimage for the Hindus. Even up to the present, hundreds and thousands of pious Hindus go to pay respects to the incarnation of Godhead, Nara Narayan. It appears that even 5,000 years ago, this holy place was being visited by such a holy being as Uddhava. And even at that time, the place was known to be very, very old. This particular pilgrimage site is very difficult to visit for ordinary men because of its difficult situation in the Himalayas, in a place which is covered by ice almost all year. A few months during the summer season, people can visit this place at great personal inconvenience. There are four dhams, or kingdoms of God, which represent the planets of the spiritual sky, which consists of the Brahmajyoti and the Vaikunthas. These are Bhardarika Ashram, Rameshwar, Jagannath Puri, Dwarka, and Dwarka. Faithful Hindus still visit all these holy places for perfection of spiritual realization, following in the footsteps of devotees like Uddhava.
Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatanvita Dam Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parija
Krishna Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha.
So, these great sages, Narada Narayan, what are they doing there anyway? This is described. They are doing penances and austerities, severe penances. Tivram tapa, severe penance. For what purpose? For the benefit of all living entities. So this is the actual definition of a great sage. A great sage, the great sages, they are not interested in their own welfare. They are interested in the welfare of all living entities. Of course, their welfare is included. They don't neglect their own welfare. But their motivation is, how can all living entities become delivered from their suffering condition in this material existence? This material existence is a hellish condition, as confirmed by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. It is not a fit place for a gentleman's residence. It is a hellish place. So the great sages, they've greatly pained, padadukaduki. They are greatly pained to see the suffering of a living entity. They can't tolerate it. It's just, it tears their heart apart to see so many people suffering in material consciousness, simply engaged in sense gratification. Therefore, they do something about it. They don't remain passive and indifferent. They do something about it. They do something to relieve the suffering condition. The sages of Naimisharanya had assembled to perform a 1,000-year sacrifice. For what purpose? To hold off the influence of the Kali Yuga. This is a saintly person. He's always thinking of how to relieve the suffering of other people. In Prabhupada's final days in Vrindavan, his last days with us on this planet, even in such a horrible condition, he couldn't eat. His body was reduced to a skeleton. If you've seen pictures, it's a very horrible condition he was in. No man could tolerate such a horrible position. But yet Prabhupada tolerated it. And in that condition, he was inquiring if the devotees were getting proper prasadam. He was thinking about the welfare of his disciples, if they were getting proper prasadam. So we can see a great saintly person. He's always thinking of the welfare of others. He's not caught up in his own comforts and discomforts. He voluntarily accepts so many varieties of discomfort just for the sake of pushing forward this Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada, can you imagine an 80-year-old man flying regularly around the world? How difficult that is, constantly traveling all over the world in an 80-year-old body. It's not an easy thing. It's a very austere thing. But Prabhupada was doing that. Because he wanted to give the people of this world the opportunity to become happy. Because without Krishna consciousness, there's no question of happiness. You may have money, you may have power, you may have prestige, you may have wife, you may have children, you may have husband, you may have so many facilities, a nice house, a nice car. You may have so many facilities, but if you are not Krishna conscious, it is simply shama eva kevalam. It's useless. It has no value. Even if you go all the way to Brahma's position, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Punaravarti Narjuna Mamu Pechida Kamjaya Punarjamana Vinita. From the highest planet in this material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But he who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, punarjamana vidyate, he never takes birth again. So all of our endeavor to be happy in this material world with our high technology, it's shama eva kevalam. It doesn't bring happiness. We may think we're happy, but what good is that illusory happiness? Someone may think they're enjoying the evening's entertainment on the Titanic, but they don't know the ship is sinking. You see? People think they're happy. I'll give you an example of illusory happiness. If I say, well, Prabhu, I have some good news for you. We're presenting you today, but you just won a lot. You just won a big contest, and now we're giving you 100 crores of rupees. And they pull a big truck pulls up in front of your house, full of boxes full of rupee notes, 1,000 rupee notes. You see. Giving you 100 crores of rupees, I'm going to deliver it to you. And they give you the boxes. The workers bring it in. They pull the box, stack up the 100 crores of rupees. And you go, wow, this is great. Get all excited. The banks are closed that day, but you have a credit card. So you take your credit card, you max it out to have a big party for all your friends, big celebration. Spending, you know, lakhs of rupees for a big celebration on your credit card. And because you know on Monday morning you're going to go deposit in the bank and all those rupees. And so you have a huge celebration. And then you were enjoying like anything. You invited your friends, your family members. You flew people in at your expense for the big celebration. It was a big, huge thing, you see. And then on Monday you take the money to the bank and they say, sir, I'm sorry to inform you, this is counterfeit money, you see. This is counterfeit money. Somebody has cheated you. You've been misinformed. This paper is useless. You can use it for fire and light a fire in your stove, and that's about it. Well, my question is, were you actually enjoying that weekend? Was that real enjoyment, your big party, when you maxed out your credit card to have a big celebration, spending lakhs of rupees for the big party? Now you have that huge credit card debt and no money to pay it back with, you see. Were you enjoying that weekend? Was that actual enjoyment? Or was it illusory enjoyment? It was illusory enjoyment. You thought you had gotten 100 crores of rupees or 1,000 crores of rupees, and you're having a big festival, a big celebration. But actually it was all counterfeit. There was nothing there. But you thought it was big money, and you celebrated, inviting all your friends for a big party. So this material happiness is like this. We think it's happiness. We think it's real happiness. But when all is said and done, when all the cards are on the table, then it will be very obvious. The whole thing was just, it was counterfeit. There was no real happiness to be had in that eating, that sleeping, that mating, that defending. All the different material activities we do to enjoy power, prestige, profit, adoration, and distinction, we'll finally see it was nothing. It was simply nothing. But I thought it was something, that's all. So why should we endeavor for those activities which are nothing more than the example I've given in the Prabhupada's books, is the will-o'-the-wisps. The will-o'-the-wisp is this type of gas that forms in the swamp that makes it look like something is there, but nothing is actually there. So we may think there is great happiness here, but there's no happiness. And because we are embracing this pseudo-happiness, this maya-sukhaya, this false happiness, we are actually in a very miserable condition. And we see how the material nature degrades, by its very nature becomes more and more degraded. Because pseudo-happiness doesn't actually satisfy one. Therefore, they have to make it more gross. Formerly, the movies in India, the popular movies were glorifying morality. But now we have seen the recent movie, Crook, It's Good to be Bad. They're showing some guy on a motorcycle. He doesn't look as bad as the Hell's Angels in the U.S., but they're getting there soon. He's on the motorcycle. He's got the prostitute girlfriend behind him. It's good to be bad. This is Indian culture now. They're promoting. How many people are seeing? It's a very popular movie. How many thousands and millions of people even are going to see that movie? It's good to be bad. And people are thinking, yeah, it's good to be bad. Let me be bad. Let me neglect religious principles. Let me neglect my parents. Let me neglect my friends. Let me neglect my spouse. It's good to be bad. So just see, with each generation, it becomes more and more decadent. Because there's no actual happiness in that illicit pleasure. So then you amp it up and make it even more illicit to try to get pleasure out of it. That's the way it works. By trying to be a little sinful, they get some pleasure. And they get some pleasure, so-called pleasure, of being a little bit sinful. But then that doesn't satisfy. Now they become even more sinful to try to get the same amount of pleasure. And now even more sinful and more sinful and more sinful. That's the way the material energy works. You can't get pleasure from it, but it's a little illusion of pleasure, but now we have to make it more grotesque, more sinful, more gross, more decadent, to get the same amount of pleasure we got before by being just a little bit sinful. So in this way, Kali is deepening his influence in the heart of every person on this planet right now. Kali has got his foot in the door of practically everyone's heart on this planet. And they have an old saying, once the salesman gets in his foot in the door, then you're finished. You see? Because once he gets his foot in the door, then he'll get in all the way, and then he'll sell you a pack of goods and rip you off big time. You see? So the key is, don't let the salesman get the foot in the door. You say, no, thank you, and slam the door, and that's it. Go to the next place. Don't come in here. So when the Kali tries to get into our hearts, well, it's okay to be a little sinful. Just like now we're seeing they're introducing into ISKCON, even though Prabhupada taught us that within married life, sex life is only for procreation. It's required. You can only have, if you're a householder and you want to have children, it's an absolute requirement. You can only have sex life once in a month and no more than that. But now we see in ISKCON, some devotees are introducing a principle. Well, it's recommended, it's not required, it's just recommended. But that's not what Prabhupada said. This is Kali putting his foot in the door of ISKCON. You see? We have to be very careful. Kali is now trying to infiltrate ISKCON. Oh, it's not required. Prabhupada didn't really mean that, Kali says. Kali says, well, it's just only recommended, it's not really required. And then once it's recommended, then it gets a little more loose, and a little more loose, and a little more loose. No, Prabhupada said, it's right there, you can read it in the Bhagavad Gita purport. It's clearly stated that for householders, there is sex life once in a month if they want to have a child, and that's it. It's not recommended, it's required, you see. So we have to be very careful to guard this, our society, from the influence of Kali. Prabhupada told us there are agents of Kali in this movement, Kali Chela. So I have to make sure that I'm not one of those people, you see. Instead of saying, well, I think you're a Kali Chela. No. Well, I have to make sure that I'm not a Kali Chela. That's the point. I have to make sure that I'm not giving in to Kali by compromising the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, by compromising the teachings of my spiritual master. It's up to each one of us to make sure that we are not representatives of Kali in this movement, that we are actually the representatives of Krishna. That I simply, I want every thought, every word and every deed in all times, places, and circumstances to be pleasing to Krishna. You may say, well, that standard sounds a little bit too severe for me. I mean, how people can handle that? You got to let them have sex as much as they want, otherwise they'll give up from being a devotee. Well, wait a minute. What does Krishna say? Vishaya vini vartante nirahara shadehina rashavarsham nishopyashva parangrishva nivartate. He says the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So, all you really need to do is get a higher taste, and then you can easily give up the lower taste. Someone is thinking, well, I have to indulge more than the required amount. I just can't follow that rule. It's too strict. That means they haven't gotten a higher taste. That means when they chant Hare Krishna, it's mechanical. They're not connecting with Krishna when they chant their japa. If you're actually connecting with Krishna when you're chanting your japa, that means you're personally meeting God. You're personally meeting with God Himself. You see. That means you're entering every day, and when you pick up your bead bag, you're actually entering into Vrindavan Dham. You see? If you're actually chanting Hare Krishna properly, you're entering into Vrindavan Dham. You have Vrindavan Dham right there in your bead bag. So all you have to do is dive into this Krishna consciousness process that Prabhupada has given. And then all material tastes, I don't need them, you see. I thought of having sex pleasure unnecessarily, spit at it. That's what Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita purport. That's the mood of someone who is actually tasting the pleasure of Krishna consciousness. The thought of having sex life, illicit sex beyond the regulated principles, I'm disgusted and I spit at the thought. So that is not an artificial spitting. That is natural, because he is getting such great pleasure. Tindai tandavali vriting vitanute tandavali lavniye karna krodha kadambani gatayate kunarvi vrivaspaham cheta prangana sangani vichayate sravindayanam gatim no jane janita ki advir krishneti vananandvai. These are the words of Rupa Goswami. That by this chanting I'm getting so much nectar from these two syllables, Krishna, that my one little mouth and my two little ears, they are not big enough to catch all the nectar, you see. So in this way, we have to understand the science of bhakti, not concoct some new so-called bhakti, which is simply will lead us into degradation. If there's any questions, you can pass them up. We have about 20 minutes left for questions. So now we'll try to answer them. Sometimes we become so service conscious that we are always in a planning mood, even in our sadhana time. Maybe because of being too ambitious or passionate, that we kind of... How can we avoid this? Well, sometimes you get an inspiration which actually is very good, and it happens in the middle of your japa. It happens sometimes. You get, wow, I could... You get a realization of... something, maybe you're writing a book or something and you give it a realization, or you're trying to solve some problem, managerial problem in the temple, and a realization comes in the middle of your japa. Well, I recommend you should keep a little book. You write it down and then go back to your sadhana. If something really powerful realization comes, then you should go take a minute, write it down, and lay it aside. You can look at it later on. But if you get some astounding realization in the middle of your japa, just write it down and then go back to your chanting. Because sometimes one may get an amazing realization about planning their day in the proper way. I didn't know how I could squeeze in this service. I could never figure out how to do it. But then when you're chanting your rounds, all of a sudden it comes. So write it down. And then go back to your chanting. Okay. Regarding services, I need one clarification. His Holiness Radhanath Swami stresses on absorption while doing services. Where should we be absorbed? Well, you have to do your service Why are you doing it? You're doing it to please your guru, and you're doing it to please Krishna. You're going to please Prabhupada and all the acharyas. So your absorption is, how can I do this service in such a mood that I'm very much pleasing to my spiritual master and the previous acharyas? That's how you absorb this thing. In other words, do it with love. Bhaktya. Patram pushpam palam tayam yome bhakta priyachati tadaham bhakti pravrishnam nasami brayadatmanaha. Does Krishna say, if you offer me a leaf, flower, food or water, I will accept it? Is that what Krishna says? He says, if you will offer me a leaf, flower, food or water, I will accept it. Does Krishna say that? Yes or no? Huh? What? Yes or no? No, that's right, it's no. Why? If he offers me with love. Note that word, you see. If I say, here Krishna, take your offering. Some frustrated cook, you know, he's in there. Yeah, I'm just tired of this Krishna consciousness movement. I go in and smoke cigarettes and have illicit sex and drink liquor and go to cinema and eat, you know, whatever I want. I'm tired of this rules and regulations. He's cooking his last offering, you know. Throw it. You see, no. With love, that my dear Lord has so kindly blessed me with this opportunity to engage in His service. So you do it with love, then you're in good shape. Let's see which. Let me get this. I'm going to mix them up here. Okay. What advice do we give to upcoming young preachers of our temple on how they can contribute to the rapid spread of this Krishna consciousness movement? Especially, we have heard of how you have been able to single-handedly transform the lives of thousands of people successfully. How do you do this? And if you could share. Actually, I'm not the doer, Prabhu. I'm simply trying to be an instrument in the hands of my spiritual master. I know that I have no capabilities whatsoever. Sometimes people say, oh, Sankarshan Prabhu, your class was so wonderful. I say, actually, it wasn't me, it was just Prabhupada. I'm just trying to stay out of the way of Prabhupada and let him act, that's all. I'm just the messenger boy for Srila Prabhupada. So whatever success I may have had, it is simply because I have tried to serve my spiritual master's order, and whatever credit I may get for whatever may be accomplished by my preaching all goes to Prabhupada. So the key is to be successful, is never take any credit for your success, and for all your mistakes, take all the credit. Yeah, it's my fault. Whatever mistakes you have made, take the full credit. Whatever success you have had, don't take any of that credit, except for one thing, that I obeyed my spiritual master. That's the one thing we can take credit for, that I obeyed my spiritual master. But even that is by His grace, because my tendency is not to obey anybody, you see. But by His grace, I'm able to obey Him. It's also by His grace. So, what can be done to make something like this successful in India? India, it doesn't matter where you are, the same principle of serving your spiritual master is a humble instrument. That applies in India, it applies in Europe and America. Even if you go on interplanetary sankirtan to the other planets, the same principle applies everywhere. It's a universal principle. Never take any credit for your success. Give all credit to your spiritual master, and I guarantee you, you will have the shakti of him and all the previous acharyas acting through you when you preach. And when that shakti comes through, you can make a revolution on this planet. Okay. How does one maintain regulated lifestyle, yuktahara, especially in the course of going out for preaching? We have unrelated prasadam, sleep timings, late night programs, sometimes chanting all 16 rounds together. Job at times, sometimes not. So in spite of preaching about a regulated lifestyle, we're not able to follow it. Well, you have to try your best. I know I've been in many different situations, and I did it. And you know, my preferred program is to get up early and chant my round before Mangal Arati. I have one godbrother, his name was Ramnath Sukha Prabhu. He's now in Sweden. Anyway, he was the cook in our temple. He was the cook. I mean, he had to take he maybe had a few helpers that cutting in vegetables, but he was in charge of all the cooking. And we had a big temple of brahmacharis, and they went out preaching every day, and they ate a lot of prasadam, you can understand. So he had a big job to be the cook. So he had, as soon as Mangal Arati was over, he was in the kitchen the whole day, cooking the deities, sweets. The whole day, was he going to do his japa? Well, he had a very good realization. He would get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, he would finish all of his round before Mangal Arati. And then during prasadam, of course, you know how the brahmacharya ashram is, it's always pretty hectic there, right? So during breakfast prasadam, everybody, all the brahmacharis down in the prasadam, he would go to the brahmacharya ashram and go to sleep. And that way he would have enough rest, and he'd have all his round on first class japa and first class cooking. And his cooking was so nice that he had to stay back for the Mayapur festival because he was cooking for the deities. But he made some rasagula, and they took it in glass, in jars for Prabhupada. All the way to Mayapur, they brought Ramasukha Prabhu's rasagulas, and the Prabhupada tasted those rasagulas of Ramasukha. He liked so much, he says, you must immediately send more of them. He was so delighted. So we got a in those days there was no internet, and the telephone connections were not very good. We got a telegram from Mayapur. Please send, Prabhupada wants more rasagula. So this devotee, he had dedicated himself to doing first-class sadhana. Even if it was difficult, he adjusted his schedule so he could have good rounds. And Prabhupada was so pleased that he requested from all the way to the other side of the world, send me more of your rasagulas. So you just have to adjust your situation as best as you can. Like I explained last night in the home program, after being a brahmachari for 14 years, having a very regulated morning program, all of a sudden I'm married and I have to get a job. And the first job I got, it was working from 11 at night till 8 in the morning. Where's my Mangal Arati? Oh my God. Where's my Mangal Arati? I go to work at 11, I get off at 8 o'clock in the morning. How can I go to Mangal Arati? Well, I was so much disturbed by this. So when I met with my new supervisor, he said, you know, nobody likes to work this night shift, so you can take as long of a lunch break as you like, no problem. So that was my Mangal Arati. I would leave the work at 4 o'clock, pick up my wife, go to the temple, 10 Mangal Arati, and then go back to work after Mangal Arati. So the thing is, if you're sincere that you want to have good sadhana, Krishna will help you. Even if it seems your schedule is difficult, somehow you'll find a way to squeeze it in. I remember in my brahmachari life, when I first joined, there was no tapes or recordings. Of course, now we have the MP3s. In those days, but that technology wasn't there. When I joined ISKCON, all we had was reel-to-reel tapes. That was it. But then just after I joined, a new technology hit the market, cassettes. That was the new technology, state-of-the-art, cassettes. You see? So they started a tape ministry in Los Angeles, the Bhaktivedanta tape ministry, producing on cassette tapes the latest morning walks, the latest lectures. You could sign up with a standing order that every week they would give you a whole envelope full of the latest nectar from Prabhupada's lecture 2 days ago. You can imagine how exciting it was to get that envelope every week. But there was one problem. There was no time in my schedule to sit and hear those tapes. What am I supposed to do? Well, I realized, you know, some things are more important than other things. So what I did, when everybody was taking, I would just fast from lunch every day. During lunchtime, I would go into the Brahmacharya Ashram, I would take those cassettes, I have notebooks full, 4 or 5 notebooks, I still have them to this very day, the notes I took from all those lectures and all that. And those morning walks. And those, all that note-taking I did, it helped me to develop as a preacher. So the point was, it seemed impossible. There's no time to hear the tapes. But I figured, well, I can give up a meal. I'm not going to die. Do I look like I came out of a refugee camp? I skipped lunch every day. But still, I didn't lose weight. I didn't lose my health. I just ate a bigger breakfast, that's all. And so the point is, you have to be sincere in your desire to do everything in a first-class way, first-class preaching, first-class morning program, first-class studying, first-class japa. If you're sincere in this way, Krishna will give you the intelligence, tesham satata yuktanam, vajatam putti purvakam, how to do it all. Okay, next one. All right. If someone is successful in cheating me, then is it my own lack of intelligence for me, or my previous karma, the responsible for the cheater's superior intelligence? Will I be held responsible for getting cheated, or is cheater's credit that he successfully cheated me? Well, one should be expert not to be cheated. That's one thing. That's the main thing. Prabhupada said that Prabhupada cannot be cheated. He said, I was a Calcutta boy. So he knew how not to be cheated. Actually, when the devotees first, this movement first began, there was some donations that come, and there was a special fund, like $5,000. That was a lot of money back in those days, back in the 60s. It was big, huge money. So Prabhupada had, they had found one building. Prabhupada wanted to get a new temple. So there was one cheating businessman. His name was Mr. Price, I think it was. So he told the devotees that you pay me the deposit money to show that you're sincere, and then I'll arrange with the owner to make a contract for the building. Anyone who knows business, that's completely bogus. You don't pay somebody money to draw up a contract. There's not even a contract, and you're giving money to draw up a contract. So the devotees were clearly cheated by this man. So. Completely cheated. It's now 23 after. So we have 7 minutes left. So I'm going to try to squeeze it in here, answer this question. Huh? It's not proper. That's the actual time. Oh, okay. We have 3 minutes left. Okay. I wish that was the bona fide time. But anyway, we have to follow the standard. So anyway, I'm going to save the rest of these questions for our next session. Wonderful question. So the point is that devotees got cheated, and Prabhupada had to rescue them. I say getting the money back. Devotees didn't know. So devotees, they get some bad reaction from being foolishly cheated. Now, the devotees weren't trying to throw Krishna's money away. It was an accident. It's not that because we're inexpert of our inexpertise in Krishna consciousness that we have to suffer some sinful reaction if somebody cheats us. They suffer the sinful reaction if they cheat the devotees. At the same time, we should be very expert not to be cheated. Prabhupada gives, the third devotees first came to India, they were all the Western boys dealing with the contractors. It's like for building the Bombay temple. The devotees were being cheated like anything, but then they engaged one of the Birlas. One of the members of the Birla family volunteered his service to look over all the accounting, and he saved us a lot of rupees, you see. Because not knowing how to do business in India, you know, it's a whole different thing than America. Different style. You know, it's very different. I know my godbrother, he came here as a house sorter to do business in India, in Gujarat. And Jagannath something, I forget his name. Jagannath something from, and he was, in the beginning, he was cheated, like, even though he's a very good businessman in the U.S., he came to India not knowing all the little tricks of the trade. He got cheated like anything for a while until he figured out what was going on, you see. So one has to be expert not to be cheated. But it's not a sin to be cheated out of your lack of knowledge. That's not considered a sin. So anyway, there's so many things we could say, and but it all boils down to this. If you want to be happy, you have to become Krishna conscious. And to be Krishna conscious means to be purely Krishna conscious. It doesn't mean mixing it with a material sense gratification. You have to be purely Krishna conscious, because if you're only partially Krishna conscious, you will only be partially happy. Now, anybody want to be partially happy? Does everybody want to be fully happy? Well, if you want to be fully happy, then you have to be fully Krishna conscious. Manchayo bevicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunam samati jayatan dhamabhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, nirt that term, full devotional service, unflinching in all circumstances, at once transcends the influence of the modes of nature and becomes fully situated in Brahman. So in this way, you have to be fully engaged in devotional service. In this way, the modes of nature, sattva-gun, tamagun, rajagun, they will not touch you. So we thank you very much for your participation in this process. Kindly take it seriously and become a pure devotee as soon as possible. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.